Amen. Remain standing and hear the word of the Lord as it comes to us from Amos, chapter 5, verse 18 and 25. Alas, those who desire the day of the Lord, why do you want the day of the Lord? It is darkness and not light, as when a man flees from a lion and meets a bear, or he goes into his house and leans his hand upon the wall, and a serpent bites him. Will not the day of the Lord be darkness and no light? It'll be gloomy with no brightness in it. I reject your festival gatherings, and I do not delight in the smell of your assemblies. Even if you offer up burnt offerings and tribute offerings, I will not be pleased. I will not look upon the peace offerings of your sacrificial animals. Take away from me the tumult of your songs and the melody of your musical instruments. I will not hear. But let justice roll down like waves of the ocean and righteousness like an ever-flowing torrent. Let us pray. Holy gracious God, we give you thanks for this day and for your word as it comes to us over thousands of years. And pray that it might inform our hearts and transform our hearts, that we might be in some way more representative of the love that is Jesus for ourselves, for others, and the world around us, and offer that love to the world around us in such a way that healing may be experienced. This we pray in Jesus' name, and all God's people said, Amen. Hey, you may be seated. It is this morning. I've been planning on using this text from Amos for quite some time. As I mentioned last week, we're gonna look at different prophets over the course of the summer. That seems like a fun summer thing to do, right? Hey, let's dig into the prophets, and Amos is a good one to start with. And last week I was talking about how like the church has often forgotten the mission of God and gotten all caught up in the methods, right, of being church, of doing church. And we've forgotten this mission of God to love others and love God. And prophets, often that is what they speak about. They come upon the scene because the church has forgotten the mission and has gotten caught up in all the methods. And we miss out on what God is truly calling us to do. And that's the case here in Amos, is that the church has forgotten the mission to love the last, the least, and the lost. And they've forgotten specifically justice, what it means for everyone to be able to experience justice. Justice in the gate, as it would be referred to, because the gate is where people would enter into Jerusalem. The gate is where trials were held. The gate is where justice was often carried out or not carried out. And so as I was trying to think about this this week and how to talk about that, Nathan, what you said was prophetic to me this morning when you said, sometimes there's no words and that's okay. And I'm glad you said that, because I had no words. I mean, Orlando, our country, Trump, I'm sorry, I have no words. I don't even know where to begin. And I was having lunch with Mike and Jim earlier this week, and we were having a discussion around justice, and I said, what if we did this on Sunday? What if we have a little discussion about justice, that Mike will kind of ask Jim and I some questions, and maybe we'll try to come up with some words together? So that's what we're going to do. I don't know if it'll go anywhere or not, but that's what we're going to try, to have a little conversation about justice. And just one little, before we start that, one little note on a little background on Amos here. So Amos starts out in chapter 1. Amos comes in and he's saying to everybody around Israel, all of Israel's neighbors, he's basically calling them all out and saying, you're not doing justice, you're not doing justice, you're not doing justice. And Israel, it's kind of a setup, because everybody in Israel would be reading this and be like, yeah, yeah, We're number one. Israel's number one. And then in chapter 2, Amos turns around and goes, and Israel, you also are not doing justice. And at least Israel goes, what? Say what? What do you mean, us? We're the good guys. We got it all going on here. We know what's up and what's down. But Amos is like, no, you don't. You think you do, and you think you got it, but you don't. And in fact, the Lord rejects all your festivals, all your gatherings. The Lord rejects your assemblies, your worship. The Lord rejects it all because you have not paid any attention to justice. And one little thing I had read about what Israel was like at that time, because the time Amos comes on the scene, Israel is very prosperous. Like, things are going well for Israel. And in a commentary I read, it said this. It said, the leaders of the nation were intoxicated with a heady pride in their status and the achievements of the nation. What was worst of all, they celebrated their own prosperity in an incredible insulation from the suffering on which it was based. The religion of Israel had become a celebration of this national optimism and preoccupation with themselves. I don't know. Does that sound like any country that you guys are familiar with? I mean, you just want to start beginning, USA, USA. Yeah. I mean, thousands of years ago, but so relevant. So can we try and have a conversation and see what happens?
Let's do it. You guys want to grab a couple mics? Yeah, so everybody can hear the pearls of wisdom.
Should we share?
Can you share?
Maybe not.
I guess not. Okay. All right. We're starting this conversation off on the wrong foot already. Great. one thing I think about in reflecting on this passage from Amos, I mean, I feel like as you were reading it, I could feel people in the room kind of like resonating with it a bit. And maybe because we're seeing connections to like our culture and our time and where we are. But when you think about Amos, and this is thousands of years ago in a completely different culture, you've got this guy who's kind of on the margins of the religious establishment and the political establishment coming in with these words. So I wonder if you guys could talk a little bit about how, given that historical context, how is this like prophetic to the church? Like these words to Israel so long ago, how do you see them being relevant to Christians today?
Well, it's kind of prophetic for me, and maybe one of the reasons that I'm sitting up here is because we started this church a long time ago, about 12 years ago, maybe longer than that, and we were over in the Goodwill building, and it was really, if anybody was there, it was a show. We put on a show. We put on a pretty good show. We did music and drama, and it had a sense of theatrical to it, and I think over the years, this congregation and the way we do worship has shifted, and the way we do ministry here has shifted as well, with this room not being really a theater, but being a place of, more often than not, hungry stomachs being filled. And how that has kind of embodied our shift as a community, and I think in a good way. And I think for me, it's also been prophetic in that, like, how does that change the way I practice my faith? And lately, I've really taken some time to think about that. And I think launching the church, my faith was really centered on community and koinonia. And now, given the world we live in, I'm just moving to a theology that's more centered on justice. And that might be just a little tiny shift, but something I think that could be significant for all of us and for the church in general in our country.
Yeah, I think like the idea of a show, and we never tried to be like perfect, but it was very theatrical. And I think the church today still gets caught up in putting on the show and needing to be a certain way to come in the doors, where where Amos is saying, like, it needs to be more authentic. And I think that's what we've always tried to be, authentic in this space. As Scott was saying, come as you are. I remember the first time Mooney, one of our homeless friends, came here, and we were out on the back patio, and Mooney, you know, he might have had a few the night before, and he might not have bathed in a while, and somebody went to hug him, and he said, no, you know, I'm smelly and I'm homeless. And this is a story Mooney will tell you. Mooney said, yeah, and the guy, whoever it was, said, yeah, well, Jesus was smelly and homeless too, so bring it in. You know, like, come as you are is kind of some of what Amos is saying and some of what, like, the church has lost.
I have a little story that happened to me a couple weeks ago, and this story is really about me and not about a commentary about the churches I went to. I went out to California a few weeks ago, and one Sunday I went to two churches. And I was invited to the first one in the morning, and it was very, I'd say, Pentecostal in nature, and it was packed. I mean, there was a line out the door, and a lot of young people, and the band was hip, and the music was great, and everybody had their hands in the air, including me, and we were singing and shouting, and it was the same words over and over. You might have experienced this worship in the past, where it's just the same couple words over and over again. It was very good. I enjoyed it, and I walked out feeling filled with the Spirit. And another friend of mine has a church that meets at 5 o'clock on the same day, only a couple miles away. So I decided to walk down and visit that church. And it was completely different. It was a 5 o'clock service, and it was sparsely populated. Wasn't that many people there. But somebody in the congregation was in the hospital, had gone to the hospital that day with a late stage miscarriage. And somebody else in the congregation had experienced the exact same thing a year before, and the pastor asked that woman to get up and lead the prayer time, and she's leading the prayer time in tears because she can relate to the person in the hospital. And then afterwards, the minister did a sermon about reconciliation that was hard, is about forgiveness, and then gave everybody a time afterwards to really reflect on their own relationships and the places where they need to find forgiveness and reconciliation. And at the end of the day, I was like, wow, that was two very, very different experiences. And I'm not judging one over the other. But for me personally, I felt like I walked away from the second experience not feeling as euphoric as the first one, but I felt like I was at church. Because it was something was real about it. And I wonder if that's what Amos is trying to say. There could be a tendency to look for the show or to be entertained. And the church is really about a community that suffers together and works through life together and stands up for the overlooked together.
One thing I noticed, Jeff, when you were unpacking the passage was the way Amos kind of sets up his audience, right? So he starts out really trashing all of their enemies and their neighbors, and Israel's like, yeah, like, Israel first. And then he, like, turns the tables and flips it over on them. And then, like, that chapter is even longer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's, right, like, detailing, sure, all
it's the
of...
the rest of the book.
He's got him right where he wants him. And I don't know, I was just thinking about, like, how difficult it is to talk about justice. Because I think that everyone kind of has maybe their own idea about what justice is. And we want to hear about justice when the message we're hearing affirms our understanding of what justice is and maybe even pats us on the back a little bit for getting it right. It's a lot harder to talk about justice or hear someone talking about justice when maybe it kind of rubs us the wrong way, or maybe it's not like our understanding of what justice is or what makes a good church or what makes a good society. So I wonder if you both maybe would take a little bit of a risk at trying to put some words around what justice is. Because I think when it's an ambiguous term, we can all kind of like get behind it, but then it gets a little bit harder sometimes to find common ground when we start putting like specifics to it. So I guess in your minds, like, when you talk about justice, what are the sorts of things that you have in mind, either in general or like specifically in our city, in our country, our context?
Yeah, that's to define justice is really difficult. And justice, it should be said, always goes hand in hand in the Old Testament with righteousness. Like there's something about justice and righteousness and not just justice itself. And an image that we can have for justice is the woman with the scales, right? Blindfolded, and the scales are kind of even. There's like an image of like justice needs to be even, like fairness. Like there's some sort of fairness. But I don't know if that's the biblical idea of justice. That might be a societal idea of justice, that things should always be fair, and that is what is just. But Amos says, no, let the waters be the way, because I did something when we had Hebrew class together, Mike, years ago, on this passage, and said, let the waters roll like, one way you can interpret it is not just like a never-ending stream, but like waves on the ocean. Like waves on the ocean are continuous, are always. Like let justice always be coming, always like a torrent. Let justice continuously come. But justice for who? For the poor. For the last, the least. Like let pour it out on those who are forgotten. Amos isn't talking about like the rich people, the Americans, he's not saying let's make Israel great again. No, doesn't care. Doesn't care, saying, what about this person that has been forgotten? What about this person because of who they are, because of what social or economic status they have in society, they have been shunned or set aside? That is the one that needs justice. And as a church, we need to pour it upon that person or that people group continuously. So I'm not sure how that works out in a political spectrum. Because if we were to truly apply that value to all of our politics, obviously there'd be no walls. There would be open arms to everybody that was the last, least, and the lost. So I'm not always sure it's great to like govern from a fully like Jesus value of justice. Sometimes you might need to have like certain laws or boundaries. But in some sense, I think justice is like boundaryless. We're supposed to be a never-stopping torrent of love and grace for all these people. Did I say anything?
Yeah, that was good. What he said. Well, as you were talking, I was thinking about how we have, for us as a community, it becomes very ambiguous. Because I think justice is kind of truth played out. Justice is truth in action. And so that's really easy if you're an absolutist. And an absolutist is a very black and white person. This is good and this is bad. But if you see truth as subjective, if there's different points of view, then does justice also come with that same sort of ambiguity and that same sort of subjectiveness? But then that becomes very awkward for me because who's to say what's right and wrong and who's to say what justice looks like in a given situation. And I think that's what we find ourselves as a country trying to figure out. And as me as a person, I want to push away from that. I want to push away from the subjectivity, and I want to move towards a more absolutist view because our current situation in our country is making me more and more angry. Our bishop has written a book called What Are We Fighting For? And it's an approach to some of the issues that we're going through as a church from a very in the middle perspective. Like, can we all have unity and see things? Can we have all these polarities but to still have unity? And I used to think, yeah, we can. And we had a circle pie here where we had discussions. But the more I get angry, the more I think, no, forget it. There can't be. And I have now a son who's transgender. And so as I see my son struggling through the things that he's struggling through right now, and to think that someone won't allow him his equal rights, that really makes me angry. And it pushes me towards one of the extremes. It makes me more of an absolutist. So it's a struggle. Justice is a struggle from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, you can, like, the whole discussion around gun control. I mean, both sides are like, well, it's a justice issue. It's a justice issue. I should be able to have my AK-49 or whatever. And the other side is like, no, it's a justice issue for all those that are being killed by these guns. You know, and so what is the answer? Like, what, I have my sense of justice. You have your sense of justice.
And just to jump in, the people who would be anti-abortion would have the same argument then.
Right.
That the fetus has a right to be born.
Yeah. Not many answers up here.
One thing I wonder about, I imagine the book you're talking about that the bishop wrote, you're trying to find like a middle ground in the church.
I don't mean to slam the book because it's actually what we're all trying to deal with as a church. How do we maintain unity but have all these differing points of view?
Right. Yeah, I totally understand where he's coming from, and I feel like in our community we've tried to hold the tension and have the conversations as much as we can. So I totally understand that for sure. And I wonder if, you're talking about the desire for common ground and unity and diversity versus the sense of having very strong opinions and convictions. And I wonder if maybe, one of the ways forward for Christians in thinking about justice is maybe less focus on determining what the right and wrong positions are. But looking around to see which are the voices that aren't present in the conversation. Because it seems to me that's one of the things that Amos does in this passage. He has taken, he's gotten attention and a certain amount of authority and is using it to speak on behalf of people who don't have a voice in the conversation because they don't have the power that the wealthier people do in their society. So I don't know if this is really a question or more just a statement that I'm making, but I don't know, maybe you guys could react to that thought. Is it about trying to create more space for, voices who aren't heard, and can the church be a place where that's happening, where it's not happening in society around us?
We should be that place. I think, a Jesus justice value would be to look around and say, is there a voice not heard in this room? And if there's not, then that's justice cannot happen in this gathering because a voice is not being heard from. A viewpoint is being neglected. I think it is this, how do we draw together in a space of grace and know what it is to value all that are in the room, and it's a difficult thing to do. And things like our social media, I think exasperates the situation, because nobody's going on there is getting like transformed by the posts that everybody else is putting on. It's just you're putting your post. I am angrily responding with my post. I'm linking to this article. You're linking to that article, and it's not a conversation. It's not a like we're gathering together face to face to do some very hard work of being with each other and loving each other and trying to find justice together, even if we hold different viewpoints.
And how many times from this stage have we said, grace for the other, justice for myself, instead of justice for the other and grace for myself? And how many of us are willing to look within our own selves as a non-racist person and examine our own racism? Or a non-homophobic person and look at our own homophobia. Recently, I was asked by a committee to write a drama about racism, and I said no off the bat because I said, well, first of all, I'm not black, so I shouldn't write a play about racism. So I was wrong about that. I turned out I went to the anti-racism committee, and they didn't really have any ideas, so I came up with an idea where the main character was an African-American woman. I had this whole thing, and they didn't like the idea at all. They didn't like the idea that the main character was going to be black. And I just didn't understand where the team was coming from. And long story short, I realized that racism's a white person problem. And it's all of our problem. And I have to examine it just as much as everybody else does, maybe more. And so in examining that my own self, I went through this experience of, I think maybe part of the push or the striving towards justice is looking within our own selves at the places where we are, we collude in the injustice and speaking that out. I noticed in when I was rereading Luke chapter 4, where Jesus pronounces his mission statement, he holds up the scroll of Isaiah and he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me to preach good news to the poor, proclaim freedom for the captives, sight for the blind, proclaim freedom for the oppressed, and declare the year of the Lord's favor." And I noticed in that passage how many times it says proclaim or preach or declare. And maybe the church, the call to the church is to speak out loud the things that we need to be speaking out loud. Standing up for the people we need to stand up for and speaking for those who are silent. But then also calling out from our own places of darkness and confessing the things that we need to confess so we get it out there on the table. And it's there. It's not hidden. It's not under the table. It's out in the light. And that could be really good.
I think you're hit. I think sometimes we're talking about justice. There is that sense of like, well, I'm right and you're wrong, and not examining, self-examining, and understanding my own sinfulness and my own whether it's white privilege or homophobia or whatever it is in me that contributes to the injustice. Instead of thinking like I've got the right position, everybody else has got the wrong position. That was like what Israel was saying. Until Amos turned it back and said, no, you're awaiting the day of the Lord. He was like, alas, which was a funeral term. Alas, those that you wait for the day of the Lord, you're going to like, it's like running from a bear to meet a lion, because you're messed up too. You've got your own brokenness, and the importance of like pulling that out and putting that on the table, confessing my stuff, my sin. And like you said, Jim, like radical grace for everybody. But then like radical sense of discipleship for myself, that I want to call myself into greater places of light. I want to follow after Jesus and learn what it means to offer grace and be just.
And there's a risk there, because if you really want to engage in that, you might end up saying the wrong thing and someone might say to you, "Jeff, you're racist," or "Jeff, you're," because it's clumsy. And we're still trying to find our way as people, especially if you're dealing with, say, racism. You might not even see your own racism. It might be behind some closed doors. It might be, the light still needs to be shined on it. So you're going to say the wrong thing and think the wrong thing, and you're not going to be righteous. And someone might call you on that. Are you willing to take that risk to get to the place that you need to go and bring the community to a place where it needs to go?
One thing I've noticed about this conversation so far about justice is like how many sort of current political issues or situations have sort of naturally bubbled up, right? We just had the massacre at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. There's been a lot of debate about the bathroom laws in North Carolina relating to transgender people. Talking about Donald Trump, talking about gun control in relation to the massacre. So it was all these like kind of hot button political issues that bubbled to the top. And recently I was reading like a short blog about a survey that had been done with millennials in like Florida about church going. And some of the results of the things that were like keeping millennials away from church. And one of the things in that was, one of the results from that survey was that, according to the guy writing this, was that millennials don't want to hear about politics. And they especially don't want to hear about politics in church. And so that's one of the things that is keeping young people away from church. I wonder if you guys could respond to that, because I was like a little bit surprised to hear about that. And maybe it's because of like the circles that I'm in. It seems like even if people don't always agree, they understand like engagement with the culture and the society around us. So I wonder if you guys could respond to your impressions of hearing that, and wondering if that really is something that's keeping people from participating in faith communities.
Well, On one hand, I can see yes, I can see where that would be, when it's legislation out of a Christian viewpoint, like we need to pass these laws because it's a Christian law that needs passed, if that makes sense,
like
and
prayer,
that turns
prayer,
people
prayer
off.
School, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Or even anti-abortion laws, because it needs to be a Christian issue, or even do the gun control. It needs to be I think that turns people off. At least in this context, I've encountered many millennials that love to talk about politics a lot more than I like to talk about it. And you can try to say Jesus wasn't political, but he was political. He upset the political establishment. It got him killed. Because he was calling out their injustices and saying, you're not caring for these people. But I do have a problem when we make Christianity to be about the political Christianity or Christianity that's political. Like when Donald Trump said something about I'll protect Christianity. Jesus never said protect any of us. Jesus said, follow me, which meant you might suffer and be abused and you might end up even dead. That had nothing to do with I will protect you. Our laws shouldn't be about protecting Christianity. That's where it's not on target. Our laws need to maybe have some values that Jesus espoused about loving and caring for the last, the least, and the lost. But I think it's problematic when we make all of our political decisions through the lens of Christianity rather than maybe the values that Jesus was sharing.
I've been kind of sensitive to this over the years because I haven't wanted to brainwash anybody or make somebody feel like they're being assimilated into a certain kind of thinking. And that's where I feel the drama has been effective for bringing up questions and issues in a way that's not didactic or preachy or teachy. And as a person, and I think this might not be the way to go. I think I'm confessing this out loud. I think that I've played on the fence for a long time. I've tried to be a person that tries to see both sides of the issue. I've been trying to be a can't we all get along kind of style of leadership. And
I think we've been on that fence together.
Yeah, we have. And I think in some ways it's been good. But in some ways, it's been to a detriment because it doesn't. Things are political, and at the end of the day, decisions get made that hurt people. And if we sit by and let those decisions get made and don't say anything and we don't stand up, then we're complicit in that. I want to use the word evil, but maybe that's a strong word. But and maybe it's not. We're complicit in that evil if we allow political things to take place that oppress people and exclude people and hurt people. I think we're complicit in that. So as leaders of the church, how do we make it non-political but also engage in the politics in a way that is something that we want to bring leadership to and that we want to help advocate? Because the whole thing in Luke chapter 4 is about advocacy. It's about speaking things out loud and declaring things. How do we become part of that?
Yeah. So when you're never gonna hear. I mean, we have we have certain leanings politically. You won't hear us endorse somebody for president or non-president. We're not
Earlier,
allowed to
you
do
said
that.
Donald Trump. You said something negative about Donald Trump. But 15
you,
minutes.
You
ago.
Might be able to gather what I would tell you how to vote. Well, no, but that's where I was going. I was going with the whole there are things that Trump says and does that marginalizes people, and I have to stand up as a Christian leader and say, no, you can't, group a whole, you can't wall off a whole country and then say, I love Mexicans. Mexicans are the best. You just can't do that. And so some of the things that he has said and the actions he's taken have been very un-Jesus, very marginalizing groups of people. So then how do we then engage that and say, yes, I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but some of the things that are being said are need to be, that's where the prophet comes in, right? That's where the prophet would stand up and say, No, that's wrong. So how do we walk that line of like trying to be prophetic and grace-filled?
Because politics is also a theological endeavor. And we might not want to admit it, but at the core of everything that we hold and believe is some sort of theology, some sort of understanding of the nature of God and who we are as human beings on this planet and how it all fits together, the universe. That's almost at the very core of your thinking. And then upon that, we put our understandings, our beliefs, our truths, our values, and our politics go upon that. And so it's hard to engage in the practice of whatever this is. I hope it hasn't been religion. Maybe it is every now and then. We talk about Jesus a lot. But there is a sense of coming to church and practicing a faith, and our politics are very connected to that. It's at the core. And so how do we engage in discussion about our theology and politics in a way that's open and free, but at the same time guiding?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it makes me think of like civil rights movement. It makes me think of like Martin Luther King walking around, I think maybe in Memphis, and seeing like looking at the churches and thinking, who are in these churches? Who are the people that are in these churches? And wondering, are they the people that are going to stand up? Are they the people that are going to take difficult political stances in that time? Or are they going to like kind of stay in their like Jesus bubble and say, oh, well, we don't do politics because, you know, we're just about Jesus. Well, Jesus was about, you know, politics and justice and righteousness and love and grace. And you're right, they're all intertwined. It's hard to like separate all that stuff out.
I said this over lunch, and just an observation I have is that back when we started this church in 2002, there was no Facebook, there was no social media. We didn't all have phones in our pockets that connected us to the whole world. It was completely different. It was completely different in every way. And so I think a lot, this is just my own opinion, I think a lot of people came to our church because they were isolated, alienated, looking for community, and the church created a space for that. Jump 14 years now, we all have community in our pockets, so we could text everybody, and I could get on Match.com, or I could get on Meetup.com, or I could, there's a whole bunch of different ways to connect communally and in community, and a lot of it's good. Does that change the nature of the way we practice our faith communities now? Is it, and maybe just as a society, are we, and I'm just asking the question, are we leaning towards practicing and participating in church because of justice issues rather than community issues? Do you know what I mean? We're coming for maybe a different, slightly different reason. And maybe I witnessed that here, probably not in every church, but are we moving to a church that's more geared towards justice and less towards the come and make a buddy?
Come and make a buddy church.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Do you sense that?
No. Well, a blog I read, Jim, you know, I'm a big blog reader. It was like 5 changes disrupting the church today or something like that. And one of them was that people come now. We are losing people by hordes. People don't come. I think that's one of the reasons. I do. I think you're right on. But the people who do come, they come because they're curious and engaged, I think is what it was. People that are still like so actually spiritually curious, hungering for something, and that are engaged, that want to be engaged. Those that used to come out of guilt, nobody has any church guilt anymore. Maybe there's a little Catholic guilt still floating around out there. Those that are coming for community, right, they're finding community in all these other spaces. Those that used to come because that's what their parents did, none of that has any traction anymore. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's a good thing. Because if I'm sitting around here looking at the curious and the engaged, then all right, then we got a chance to do something that's maybe justice-oriented.
And then this just hit into my head. So what does church look like moving forward? And if it looks like doing justice, and justice means speaking truth, and speaking truth means examining your own racism, then coming to church means coming and examining your own racism? That sounds terrible. I don't want to do that.
Who wants to sign up for that?
But what if that's the endeavor? What if like that's the gathering? That's the place where we come and we examine and we do the hard work of looking inside of ourselves as individuals and as a community so that society can there can be real justice.
That sounds like a good
Yeah. How's that? Is that a good close? Is that
the close? I think eyes are glazing over.
Thank you.